Okay, welcome. Hold on. Welcome back. Jeff Sachs here, Masechet Tanit from Mishkan Sipora and Web Yeshiva. And welcome back to you, Yehudi Feldman. And thank you for your sponsorship of tonight's shiur. In honor of an unworthy honoree. We are at the bottom of Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Here we learned last week we didn't have shiur. Next week Chalamoid, I'm assuming we won't have shiur. The week after Chalamoid, the week after Shvi Shel Pesach, we will have shiur. But then I'm going to be traveling for work to Chutz Laretz for a couple weeks, and we'll have to play it by ear. In theory, I'd be able to teach in the afternoons there, but we'll have to play it by ear. We'll let you know each week. But stay tuned for information on that. So we're here at the last week. We learned the Choni. 2 weeks ago, last year, we learned the Choni Amagel. Agadot, this famous Agadot. And now the Gemara continues with related Choni material. Abachilkia Bar Bure de Choni. Abachilkia was the grandson of Choni Amagel. Is there a Rehov Choni Amagel in Yerushalayim? Anywhere? David, do you know?
I don't know, but I can check.
That's your department, street names. There is an Abachilkia, you know, in Katamon. You have all of the more, you know, minor, some of the minor rabbinic figures all have.
There is looks like maybe Geula.
In Geula, that's interesting.
Or not, maybe not Geula.
Why Geula?
Why isn't it showing me? Meisharim.
That doesn't make sense.
In Meisharim, yeah.
But of course, if I stood on
they should name a traffic circle after him.
Well, it's in Meisharim. I guess things haven't changed there in 7 years, so maybe that's why they picked.
No, you know, like the street names do change. Like today the Nevi'im are all in Geula, right? Are over like Trei Asar is over there in Geula, and the other Nevi'im are over in that part of the world. But that wasn't always the case. The Nevi'im were originally in Arnona, in Talpiot. The Rehov Klausner, where Beit Agnon is in Talpiot, was originally Rehov Yecheskel, until Klausner died in the 50s or whenever that was, and they renamed the street. And then they moved all the street names, they moved all the names of the Nevi'im. I guess they figured the Haredim would want to live on those streets. But the history of like how street names have moved around is an interesting one. So I would have thought there'd be a Rehov Choni Amagel in Yerushalayim.
There is.
Okay. Right, but where is it?
Yeah, I'm not the only one.
In Meisharim, not good, in Meisharim.
Very good. Because I remember being there, but I was probably, you know, a street that was there 50 years ago is no longer necessarily there.
Right.
It's interesting. There doesn't seem to be any other streets in that neighborhood that are
right,
like, where, related. Yeah. They're about Chevrat Shas and Chevrat Tehillim and Ein Yaakov,
there's a Nochem Ish Gamzu. It's next to Nochem Ish. It's parallel to Rehov Nochem Ish Gamzu.
Well, that's my Masechet Ta'anit section.
Right. Well, those two at least.
I don't see Nochem Ish Gamzu in the...
It's parallel. It's one over.
Ah, yeah. I'm going to scroll in a little more. Yeah.
Right? Okay. There's Chevra Shat, Chevra Shas, Chevra Tilim. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, let's go back to the real stuff here. So Abachilkia, whose street is in Katamon, is a grandson of Choni Amagel, and he inherited the family talent. Abachilkia Barbare de Choni Amagel Hava... V'ki mitztarech alma lemitra havu mishadre rabbonon legabehu. When the world needed rain, so they knew where to go. They knew that, you know, Choni, you know, passed away after he came out of his deep sleep. But his grandson had the gift. So they would send they would send Rabbonan to Abba Chilkia to do the deed, to do the magic, to work the charm. Uvoi rachme v'ati mitra, and he would pray, and rain would fall. Zim nechada itzterech alma lemitra. It happened once that the world was in need of rain. It's interesting, of course. I mean, I assume this is just a metaphor to say the world is in need of rain. Obviously, there's never a case where the whole wide world needs rain. In other words, if there's a drought here, there's a flood somewhere else. But if you live in a place where it needs rain, so as far as you're concerned, the whole world needs rain. So Shadar Rabbanan, Zuga de Rabbanan. So the rabbis sent two rabbinic emissaries, Lagabe, to Abba Chilkia, Limi Boy Rachame de Nete Mitra. Excuse me, let me turn off my phone. So they went. They went to him to ask him that he should daven that there should be rain. Ozil levete v'lo ashkechu. They get to his house and he is not to be found. Ozil bedavra. So they go out into the field v'ashkechu dehavaka rafik, and they find him working the ground. You know, not plowing, but what do you call that?
Hoeing
the ground. Yeah, he's got a hoe. Yeah, right. He's got a hoe and he's digging furrows in the ground. Yehovle Shlama. They say to him, Shalom Aleichem. Turn the page. Kaf Gimel Amud Bet at the top. So they say to him, Shalom Aleichem. Velo Azber Leheapu. Ape. And he doesn't greet them back. Bifanya ki hava menaket tzivei. So in the evening he was collecting up kindling wood, firewood to take back home. Umara bechad katfe, and he places it onto his shoulder. Veglima bechad kanfe, and he takes his cloak, and he puts it on another shoulder. Kula archa lo siem mesane, and on the whole walk home, he's barefoot, he's not wearing shoes. Kimate lamaya, when he reaches the water, there must have been a brook or something he had to cross. Seim mesane, he puts on his shoes to cross the water. Kimate lehizme vehige, when he comes to a place full of thistles and thorns and rough stuff, dleinu lemane, he like hiked up his garment. I'm not explaining any of these things. You know, it's a catalog of his behaviors. The Gemara momentarily will unpack each of these things. Kimata lamata, when he reaches town, nafka devetu la'ape ki mikashta. So when he reaches town, his wife, his bayit, betayhu, his wife comes out to greet him, and she's all gussied up, as my grandmother would say. She's all mikushetet. She's all dressed in her finery or wearing her jewelry. Kimata levete, when he reaches his house, alat devetu beresha. His wife goes into the house first. Vahader ayel ihu, and he follows her. Vahader ayel rabbonon, and then these two rabbis that have been following him around the whole day, observing his behavior, cataloging all of his different actions, they go into the house after him. Yati v'koyach rifta. He sits down and he breaks bread. This is a phrase by the koyach rifta. Is a phrase that appears quite a few times in our... I mean, it appears throughout Shas, of course, but this idea of somebody sitting down and breaking bread appears, I think, quite a few times. This is probably the fourth time we've seen it just in this parak. V'lo amar lehu rabbanon. And he doesn't say a word to the rabbis. Tu kruchu. And he doesn't say to them, come and eat with me. Meaning he sits down, he has his meal, he doesn't share or offer them, his house guests, anything. Plagrifta linuke, he gives some of his bread to his children, the kashisha chada, to the older child he gives one piece of bread, ulazutra trei, and to the little child he gives two pieces of bread.
Rabbi Sachs?
Yes, Yehudi.
Where it says karach rifta, you translated break bread, but it seems to me that plag rifka means that, and karach means what karach means to us.
Made a sandwich. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. I was speaking metaphorically, but yes, karach rifta means he rolled his bread around whatever he was eating, and he made himself a. Would you accept the metaphorical translation? He made himself a sandwich.
Okay. But he didn't tell to Rabbanan to join up.
Right. I mean, that's clear. So Omer le lidvetu, he says to his wife, Yadona de Rabbanan mishum mitra ka'atu. I know that these two rabbis, they came because of the situation with the rain. Nesak le'igra v'niboy rachamei. So let's you and me and you, Mrs., let's go up to the roof and we'll ask Vildavin. Efshar de miratze HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yete mitra. Maybe Hashem will be satisfied, he'll be appeased, and he will send the rain. In other words, they haven't even asked him anything. They haven't said a word throughout the whole Agadah. There's besides saying Shalom Aleichem, he doesn't respond. He ignores them the whole time, right? But he knows why they've come. And after he, I guess, comes home from a long day's work in the field, he says to his wife, "Well, they're here because of the rain. We better go up and daven, and Hashem will be satisfied, and he'll send the rain." Kam ihu b'chada zavita. V'ihu b'chada zavita. So they go up to the roof. She stands in one corner. He stands in the other. Of course, this idea of a husband and wife standing in opposite corners and davening. What is that playing off of?
Yitzchak and Rivka.
Yitzchak and Rivka when they're davening for a child. When they're davening for a child. I know someone who. Once confessed to me that when they were a little kid in cheder, but they were like a little more. I didn't have too many yeshivish friends growing up, but this was a kid who was like a little more from a little more of a yeshivish crowd. So he told me that when he was a little kid, he thought that's where babies came from, from the birds and the bees. You know, that's what he thought goes on. If Abanim are davening in opposite corners, you're gonna have a baby. Kadem sluk anane mehach zavita devevetu. So while they are davening, immediately clouds come from her side. In other words, she's on one corner, and the clouds, the rain clouds, start forming on her side. Kinochit amar lehu. When they come down from the roof, he says to them, "Amai atu rabanan? Why have you come?" Now, he knows perfectly well why they've come, and not only does he know why they've come, but he's already preemptively fulfilled their request by going and davening, and the rain clouds are already on the way. Omrulei, shtari lan rabbanon, legabe demar, limiboy rachame amitra. Because the Chachamim sent us to you, to the master, that you should daven to send the rain. Omar lohu baruch hamokom shelo hitzrich etchem la'aba Hilkiah. So he says to them, "Thank God, you don't need to ask Abba Hilkiah. You don't need to ask me, because why? In other words, because it's already raining." In other words, he preempts their request. Now, even though he knows why they're there, and he says to his wife, "We better go up to the roof because that's why they've come," but he prevents them from having to ask. Now this is very different. The behavior of the second generation is quite different than that of the first. Now, this is quite different than Choni. Right? I mean, how does Abba Hilkiah differ from his Zaydi? No?
Choni would never say something. In other words, Choni is more than willing to accept the honor that he's given. He doesn't seem to run away from it. If anything, he revels in it to the point that Shimon ben Shetach tries to pretty much put him down and say, you know, Choni, we don't pray like that around here. Around here, if you want to pray, you got to go through channels, meaning me. You know, now, on the other hand, this fellow is so modest that he basically tries to make out like he had nothing to do with it.
Right.
He could have prayed in the house. Why did he have to go up to the roof? Obviously, to get away from the guy so they don't see him pray.
Uh-huh. But also, his method is much more conventional than Choni. Right, it's Choni has this whole show with the circle, and he's arguing with God, and he's
trying to draw attention to himself.
Well, either he's trying to draw his head, but he's also trying to manipulate God, right?
Yeah. Keep in mind that his grandson is still alive after the 70 years sleep.
Right, but presumably this story is the grandson is now.
Grandson at some point.
What?
Goes to the house.
Yeah, but
he goes to the house and asks if his son is alive.
Right.
Son's not alive, but grandson is alive. Right.
But presumably this story.
Grandson must have known.
Yeah. But presumably he must have known the story of Choni.
Exactly.
But
he doesn't want to behave that way.
But he must be at this point, assuming it's the same grandson as. Assuming Abba Chilkiah is the grandson, the anonymous grandson that appears in the first Haggadah, but even if not, he's a member of the same generation as that grandson. He's still young enough that he's working in the field, but he must be already well into middle age, if not older at this point. But if he's the one that they're coming to for miracle work, you know, he's not a kid. So Omer Leh. Omer Leh, Yadinan Demitra Machmad Marhu Da'ata. Oh, you can't fool us. We know. Here, let me just move it down a drop. We know that the rain has come because of you. You can't fool us, even though we haven't yet asked you, right? I guess they presume that the rain which is starting to fall, or the rain clouds that are starting to form, are in the merit of Abba Chilkiah, and maybe they even know that when he and his wife stepped out of the room, or maybe they even saw them, you know, climb up the stairs to the roof.
Heard them climbing the stairs up to the roof, so they knew that they went to the roof.
Yeah, so they said, presumably they know that he already interceded. So Yadina Demitra Machmat Marhu Data. Ella lema lan mar hanimili ditmi holon. But okay, so you've already taken care of the main problem, which is the rain. But now we've got 1,000 other questions. We'd like to understand your behavior all day long. And now the Gemara will unpack everything that Abba Chilkiah had done as a way of kind of showing Torah hi ulamda anachnu tzrichim, that from the simple behaviors and the sichot chulin and the everyday lifestyle of the chachamim and the righteous, we can learn virtue. So explain to us, my taima ki yahavina lamar shlama, lo azmer lan marape. When we showed up earlier today and we said to you, hello, why did you not return our greeting? So Amar Lohu, he says to them, Schir yom havai. I am a daily laborer. I get paid for my day's labor. Va'amina lo ipagar. I wasn't able to have a pigur. I wasn't able to delay my work. That's when you're on the clock, you have to be honest to your employer. How could I take my day's wage if I took off time in order to return the greeting to you? That's pretty good. I don't think any of us have that kind of work ethic. I also don't think that any of us, you know, have jobs. I mean, maybe you hear these stories about the people that work in Amazon where they don't, like, even go to the bathroom. I mean, you hear all types of crazy stories about what the work environment is like. You know, the people that work I don't mean people that work, like, in the office. I mean, the people that work in the warehouses, right? That they have to, you know, like the rats in the maze, they have to run around, you know, filling the boxes and and stocking the shelves and all those other things. You know, like they don't even take a break to go to the bathroom because it's such a demanding workplace. So, you know, maybe something like that. If they take their job seriously, they don't stop to say hello because it's going to set them behind schedule. Umay taima dara mar sive echad katfei v'glim echad katfei. Why did you put your log of wood on one shoulder and you put your coat, your cloak, on the other shoulder? So amar lahu, talit sh'ula haita. It's a borrowed garment. It's a borrowed garment. Lahachi sha'le, v'lahachi lo sha'le. I borrowed it for, you know, to keep warm, but I didn't borrow it in order to schlep a log on. In other words, like if you borrow somebody's coat, they expect to get it back in a reasonable condition. And if it's, you know, going to be all scuffed up or marked up or torn because you were schlepping firewood on that shoulder, they're going to be upset. So he took his, whatever the talit was, and he folded it, you know, like the way that sometimes, you know, like when you're wearing a talis and, you know, you have to take your jacket off. If you're taking your jacket off to put on your tefillin or something like that. So you'll take both ends of the talis and you put it over one shoulder and you'll kind of like try to make sure it balances so that it doesn't go. I just got a new talis that's a little, the fabric is a little, how would you say? Well, it has like a little texture to it. It's not smooth. Has a little texture to it, and it doesn't slip like my old talus did. It's wow. Actually quite nice.
Navi.
What?
The word is Navi, N-U-V-V-Y.
Navi? That's the word for the texture of the fabric?
That's the fabric, yeah.
That's an English word?
So, coming from somebody, my father was in the shamata business for years and years, so...
okay. So he took his talus and he put it over both sides of one shoulder so they could put the log over the other so that the beged that was borrowed wouldn't get dirty. So my taima kula archa lo sayem mar masane. Why'd you go barefoot the whole time? V'chimata lamaya sayem masane. And then when you got to the water that you had a crossover, you did put your shoes on. So Omar Luhu, Kula Orcha Chazena, the whole way I was able to see in front of me, Bamaya Lo Chazena, but I can't see what's going on in the water. In other words, I was able to walk barefoot because I can see what's in my path and I know I won't step on something sharp or I won't hurt myself. And I, therefore, I can go the whole distance without, you know, wearing down my shoes a little bit. But you see that, like, we're dealing with somebody who is a very, very modest means. First of all, he's a day laborer. He works, he gets paid for the day. He doesn't work, he doesn't get paid. He's not a salaried employee. And he has to borrow somebody's cloak in order to go out into the cold. And he's careful with his shoes to only wear them when he needs them so that they shouldn't get worn out. They must have been like Crocs, you know, like water shoes, you know, that he could walk across the water. But he didn't want to walk in the water where he couldn't see what was underneath because he would have stepped on something. And he... So they asked...
Zach?
Yeah?
Doesn't it strike you as being a little hard for a person to have a robe on one shoulder, wood on the other, and then also be able to focus their eyes on the ground to the point that they're able to spot anything that they might step on? And remember, if there is something like that, they have to, you know, if they can't just immediately get around it, they might have to unload the wood in order to basically make a path and a road for themselves. I mean, in other words, this story is getting to the point where it seems to be, you know, in a different world other than Olam Hazeh.
Well, I mean, we're talking about a character who is able to pray and bring the rain and is the grandson of in a family where people take 70 years naps. So we're already dealing in the world of the miraculous and the unusual. So I think the Agada kind of piling on, you know, these details to make it's part of the ifyun, the characterization of this miraculous figure. So my time aki mate mar le chizme vehige, when you came to the kotz vedardar, when you got to the rough patch, the shrubs and the thorns and the thistles, why did you delaney lamane? Why did you like lift up your, I don't know, like let's say he rolled up his pants legs or whatever the equivalent would have been, so that he didn't walk through the kotzim. So amar lehu ze mala rucha.
Can you move the marker down a little bit?
What?
I'm having trouble hearing to what he said.
You here? I'm going to synchronize. You see where we are?
Yeah, but I can't hear what the gentleman said.
He just asked me to move the screen.
Okay.
You see where we are?
I see.
Ze mala arucha veze ena mala arucha. Right? He says, no, because if I get scratched by the thorns, so, okay, like, you know, I'll have a scratch, but it'll heal. But my pants, if my pants get torn, I'm stuck. So my timer, kimata la malamata, nafka devetu demar ki mekashta. So when you got to the town, why was your wife waiting there on the, imagine the outskirts of town, all dressed up, all mikushetet? Amar lehu, kedei shelo etein enai beisha acheret. Well, why does any...
sounds so saintly, Rabbi Sachs.
What?
That's plowing in the other direction. By the way, I just meant to say the part about the pants, I doubt about that. I think people in those days, even gentlemen, wore what we would call togas or...
Yeah, I said, I'll call it pants. When I said I'll call it pants, I'm kind of like translating it into our contemporary idiom. Right, but okay. Yeah, whatever his garment was, he was wearing this kind of long garment. He lifted it up. So why does she come out to greet me all dressed up so that I'll pay attention to her and I won't be distracted and look at other women? So my time, Ile Hebereisha, Vahada Ilmar Batra, Vahada Ile Anan. So why did we go into the house? She went first. And then you followed, and then we followed after. Like normally, like what's the norm when you're walking into the house? Normally, you say guests first. So why did you let us go in last?
Are you sure about that, Rav Shach?
What do you mean? The guests
say
go first.
Let's say. In a situation like this, it would seem to me just the opposite. In other words, I don't find anything strange about this behavior. The woman goes into the house first, then the man, and then the guests.
Okay, well, the Chachamim wanted to know, like, I guess the presumption here is that everything was done with some purpose. So why is that the purpose? Like, why is that the manner in which this happened? I mean, they dissect each and every point, each and every action that they observed. But even
what
for this,
I'm saying is that some of the actions make more sense than others.
Okay, so you he know, says,
at least, you know, look, if we're going to read it, we have to be critical readers. We can't just.
What was it about it that you think they thought was unusual?
That's my point. In other words, in somewhere here we have to figure it out. In other words, we have to look at this and say something is strange here. I also think it's strange. Kadesh Shalom Atani and I be Isha. You're trying to tell me that this man who's so saintly and who's praise for rain and gets it, and like we just said before, behaves in a way that most people wouldn't think of behaving. now he has to worry. His wife has to, every time she comes out of the house to greet him, has to get all dressed up so he won't stare at another woman?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, doesn't that strike you as being a little strange?
It's not even, well, it's not even stare. It's, he won't even, put his eyes on another woman.
I mean, do you know anybody in the world whose wife basically feels that she has to dress up every single time that the gentleman arrives home from work because of the fact that if she doesn't, he's going to go staring at another woman? At Taney and I, sure sounds like staring to me.
When we first got married, admittedly, about 25 years ago, there was this Xerox of a thing that went around amongst my wife and, you know, her friends, you know, many of whom were getting married around the same time. It was a Xerox of a magazine article from like the Ladies' Home Journal or one of those types of things from the 50s. And it was a real thing. It was a real, it reads almost like a Purim spiel. But
we were born far too late.
Right. And it was advice to the happy homemaker for how to get the house ready for your husband when he returns from his hard day's work.
And dress nicely for him.
And you would get dressed nicely, you would put on your lipstick, you would do your hair, you would, you know, make sure the house has to be, when he walks in the door, the house should be calm and quiet and the children should be scrubbed and tubbed and, you know, already, you know, you've already fed the children and, you know, so that, you know, like in Mary Poppins, he can pat them on the head and send them off to bed.
He doesn't even want to eat dinner with his own kids?
No. Well, adults didn't eat dinner with their own kids. That was, you know, the kids ate, the nanny would feed the kids or something like that. He would see the children, but he wouldn't
get it.
But, and, you know, he would sit down, there'd be candles, and she would be dressed up nice. And it said something like, you know, he's had a hard day. He doesn't want to see you, you know, looking like a schmat at the end of the day. He's entitled to see you looking nice. And don't bother him with all the petty things that you've been dealing with all day long, because, you know, he's been out there in the office dealing with important matters. He doesn't want to listen to like your chit-chat about this, that. You should ask him about his day.
You have to realize that you can't really explain the ethics of the Bali.
Yeah.
On a basis,
I know, but maybe the Ima Chilkia, was had read this Betty Crocker thing, and she wanted to look nice for her husband, and he assumes that, you know, he wants to be. Maybe it was Mishpacha magazine. Anyway, so I remember this magazine, this Xerox of this old magazine article going around, and, you know, my wife and her friends think it was just the most ridiculous thing they'd ever heard of their whole life. And Howie, like you, I was thinking, well, it doesn't sound so bad. So, my time of kikarech marifta, lo amar lan, aite kruche. So when you were making your sandwich, when you were eating your bread, why didn't you say, why don't you offer us a little something to eat? Mishum de lo nefisha rifta, v'amina lo achazik bohu barabanan tivuta bachinam. This is because there's not enough. He's very honest with them. Why didn't I offer you anything to eat? Because we don't have enough to eat in the house. He's a very, obviously, by now the reader knows, he's a very poor man. So there wasn't enough. If I would have offered you something to eat, we would have been playing a game. You, at this point, you have spent enough time observing me to know that we don't have enough to eat in this house. If I would have been hospitable and offered you something to eat, you would have said no. Oh wait, no, I'm sorry, we skipped something. So why did she go in and then we went in? So he says because I hadn't checked you out. Mishum de lo bidikituli, because you're unknown to me. I'm not going to leave you alone with my wife. In other words, if you go in first, now this is a halacha. When the guests are coming, you shouldn't let the guests go in first. Why? Forget the wife. There's no wife. There's just you and your guest. You should go in first. Because if there's been a thief in your house, the Gemara says if there was a thief in the house and the thief stole something and left, and then the guest goes into the house, and then you come into your house and you see something is missing, you are going to be choshed b'chsherim in this guest. There's a story about Agnon and Rav Kook. Here's Agnon. Rav Kook comes to visit Agnon, and Agnon says to him, "Kvod Harav, you go in first." And Rav Kook says to him, "No, apparently they had learned this Gemara together." He says, "I once taught you. You can't." He says, "You can't let me go in first because you'd be choshed me that I stole something from you." So Agnon said, "That's ridiculous. I'm not going to be choshed Rav Kook that you stole something from my house." Rav Kook says, "It doesn't matter. It's a din mefurish in the Gemara." So Agnon went into the house first. So he says, "You can't let the guest in first for that. And if my wife goes in first and then you go in first, so it's not proper to leave you alone with my wife." So my time, Akikoyach, my river. So why didn't you offer something to eat? So he says, because he knows. He says, "I know that we're poor. So if I offer you something to eat out of nimus, out of politeness, and you, out of politeness, say no, because you know there's not enough to eat, so then I have been," what the Gemara in Chulin, which we learned together once many, 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 many years ago, the Gemara in Chulin calls machzik tova b'chinam. That is the technical definition of gnevat da'at. We often use the phrase gnevat da'at colloquially. We think that gnevat da'at it's used colloquially both in halachic writing and in legal writing for copyright infringement. Right? In other words, if I publish something that you have the copyright on, so I'm stealing your intellectual property, right? You know, here colloquially called da'at. But that's not the technical definition of gnevat da'at. Gnevat da'at in the Gemara, in the halacha, is what's called hamachzik tova b'chinam. The example that's given in the Gemara in Chulin is that, let's say I'm making a wedding. So, you know, you're making a wedding, you can't invite everybody because there's a budget. Right? There's a lot of people. If you could invite, 100 more people, there are people that would make the cut. But you can't. You can only invite 100 people. You can't invite 200 people. So there's numbers. You take all the people in your life and you line them up from 1 to 100. And those are the people that get invited. But if you could invite another 200 people, those are the people that would be on the list from number 101 to number 200. But they're not going to make the cut because you can't invite that many people because there's a budget. So what if number 150... Who's not going to get invited to your wedding, but you know he's away. You know he's going to be in Chutz Laretz when you're making the wedding. So you can invite him, because he's not going to come. That's called Hamachzik Tova Bachinam. You don't really want him to come. And if you thought he was going to come, you wouldn't invite him. But you're inviting him to be polite, knowing that he's away on the day of the wedding and he won't eat a quarter piece of chicken, which you won't have to pay for. Right? But what have you done? I mean, you think it's not, you think you're doing it to be polite. But really, you've engendered his good feelings for free. Meaning you have caused some sense of debt on his part to you with no reciprocity. When he's going to make a wedding, he's now going to feel obligated to invite you. So that's the definition of hamachzik of gnevat da'at in the Gemara in Chulin. You can think of 1,000 other, similar.
But on the other hand, he did make the guest, the person who's inviting, feel good.
Yeah, but in other words, it was under, there's a falsehood. Right, and if his plans got canceled, if he ends up not flying to America and he shows up at your wedding, you're a little disgruntled about it. I mean, you're happy to see the guy, but you really wouldn't have invited him if you thought he was going to show up. Right? So even though you might have made him feel good.
Examples would be, you know, you go into a store where you have no intention of buying something, and you just start to ask the price and handle, but you have no intention.
Right.
Not because you're trying to compare prices, that's okay. But you have no intention.
Right. Right.
That's not gonna be that. That's on a atavarim.
That's varim.
Those are two different things.
So anyway, so he says, "I. So why didn't I offer you anything? Because I didn't want to be machzik tova b'chinam. Because I didn't have any food to give you." So they say to him, "So my time, Yoiv Mali Nuka Kshisha Chada Rifta Velzutra Trey. Why'd you give the older kid one piece of bread and the younger kid two pieces of bread?" Omar Lahu, "Hi Kai Deveta, v'hai Yoti Bevekinishta." So he says, because the older kid sits at home, and the younger kid goes to the Beit Knesset. Meaning, he must learn in cheder in the Beit Knesset. Meaning, the older kid is home all day. So if he's hungry, Rashi says, if he's hungry, he can take whatever he wants to eat. The younger kid hasn't eaten all day because there's no lunch program, I guess, in the cheder. So when he comes home, he's extra hungry. Okay. My time of coming.
Okay. First, if there's no food in the house, then the younger kid can't eat anytime he wants because there's no food.
Obviously, there is food. They're sitting down for a family meal. Obviously, there is food in the house, but there's not a lot of food in the house.
He doesn't even have enough to serve a guest.
No, so
and obviously, there's no food in the house.
That's number one. Number two.
Okay.
Not necessarily. In other words, poor people do have food. I mean, there are people that have absolutely nothing.
Not worthy of guests.
He says, meaning we have enough to get us through the day. Getting us through the day is you eat something in the evening, eat something in the afternoon. There's a little something to nibble on for the children during the day, but we don't have extra beyond what's needed, you know, for the family's needs to get through day to day. Right, it doesn't literally mean that we're gnawing on bones. So, my time here we're almost done. My time kadem siluk anane mehoch zavita dahavet kamay devetai demar lane de day. Why did the so they're obviously aware of what went on in the roof? Like they know. Not only are they aware, but they seem to have seen it. They say, why? In other words, you daven in this corner, she daven in that corner, and the rain is coming from her side. Why is the rain coming from her side and not from your side? In other words, it's Ima Chilkia that seems to be the wonder worker, not Abba Chilkia. Mishum de'itata shchicha beveta. Why is she the wonder worker? Because she sits at home. V'yava rifta la'aniye, and she gives bread to the poor. In other words, they do have some food at home. They have enough, the minimum for their family, and to help out the poor. You know, because no matter how poor you are, there's always somebody that's worse off than you. Umekarva hanayata v'ana yahav nazuza. She sits at home, and she gives bread to the poor. And therefore, mikarva hanayata, their hana'a, their getting relief and pleasure, is immediate. A hungry person comes to the door, you give them a piece of bread, they fill their stomach. But what do I do? Ana yavne zuza, I give them a penny. Right? So you can't eat a penny. The poor person has to take your penny and he has to put it together with another penny and he has to go to the store and he has to buy himself a piece of bread to eat it. So I give charity in money. Velo mekarva hanayata. And their hana'a, their benefit from my charity is not karov. It's not right away. It's not immediate. My righteous wife is always very careful on Purim. We don't give a whole lot of shalach manot, because really, I mean, who needs it? You know, I mean, honestly, you need another little thing with a cookie and a, you know, who knows what. But we try to give matanot levyonim. So beyond giving money to matanot levyonim, she prepares these food baskets with like a proper suda, with like meat and potatoes and a bottle of wine and challahs and, you know, all those things. And, you know, they're, you know, fortunately for people that want to give tzedakah, but unfortunately for the people that need the tzedakah, they're usually some aniyim hanging around. And we go and find the aniyim, and she gives them a proper food basket, right? It's much better than giving charity money to an organization that's mechalek it, whatever, right? In other words, if a person is hungry, it's better to get the picnic basket. So inami. So he says. Why was her prayer answered before mine? Because she's a greater, more righteous person. Right, she sees someone in need and she answers the need immediately, and I see someone in need and I help out in a more indirect way. So inami, alternatively, hanhu biryone dahava be shivavutan. Those rascals, those biryonim, those hoodlums, you know, the rishoyim, the bad people in the neighborhood. Ana boy rachame dilemetu. I daven that they should drop dead. Vehi boy rachame dilahadru betiuvta vahadar. And she davens that they should do tshuva. And you know what happens? Her prayers are answered. They do tshuva. She's like a whole Chabad house. She's giving food and she's giving drink and she's being makari of them for tshuva, right? And me, I'm doing what I have to do. I'm doing the minimum. And I'm saying it would be better if they weren't around in the first place. Right? You know, like, there are two ways. If there's a problem, there are two ways to deal with it. You can, like, you know, get rid of it, or you can solve it. She's a problem solver. I'm a problem squasher. So, the question is answered. The question is asked. Here, what's going on, really, it's in her merit that this is all happening. It's not Abba Chilkia. It's not the grandson of Choni HaMa'agel. The grandson of Choni HaMa'agel is only in the family rainmaking business because he made a good shidduch, right? And he has all of these, these characteristics, right, which the rabbis are looking to like learn each and everything. But some of them are, you know, even though they're virtues, you know, like if you borrow someone else's clothing, you should treat it respectfully, right? And with your own clothing, with your own property, you should treat your own property respectfully, right? In other words, you shouldn't be a spendthrift. Right, you shouldn't. You know, this is like a message. Like, you know, I'm always trying to teach my kids. We have this blanket that goes over the couch. You know, like one of these throw blankets. And for some reason, like every kid, I mean, there have been a few different Gilgulim of this blanket that goes over the couch in the living room. Every kid has like used it as like Superman's cape or something. You know, like I'm constantly coming home and finding it like spread out on the floor, or it's been made into a tent with a broomstick underneath or whatever. And this agitates me to no end. Right? And I remember once I got really agitated and I said, you know, I picked it up from the dirty floor and I folded it and I dusted it off and I put it back on the couch where it belongs. And I said, you have to treat it with respect. And a member of the household said, respect for a blanket? And I said, no, not respect for a blanket, but respect for the idea that somebody gets up in the morning. In this case, by coincidence, it happened to be me. That somebody gets up in the morning and goes and does a day's work in order that we should have things in the home, and showing respect for the family's property is a way of showing appreciation for, you know, for that value, right? You know, the idea that we treat, you know, our possessions, you know, because thankfully we live in a, you know, most of us, thankfully, all of us maybe, you know, have parnassa and we're able to buy things for ourselves and for our family and etc. And, you know, but we shouldn't live in a disposable economy. Like, treat your property like it's junk, because anyway, you can go out and buy yourself a new one. That's a very bad value. Right, you shouldn't. You should communicate the value of things by treating them with respect, because it shows not that your shoes deserve respect, right? But it shows the value of labor. It shows the value of work, particularly for someone in this situation who doesn't have a lot of money. But the virtue itself is the same. The value itself is the same, even for us who, thank God, are not in his financial position. So she her prayers are answered first because of the way she gives tzedakah, right? Instead of giving money to the poor, she actually gives them food to solve their hunger. And because she's at home, she's able to do that. And that's why her prayer was answered first. And then
you have time for the question?
Well, let me just give me 1 second.
Okay, fine. I thought you were done. Sorry.
And then the second reason the Gemara gives is because instead of saying, well, it would be better if all the sinners would die, it would be better if they did shuva. Of course, that reminds us of Yitamu Chatoyim Min Haaretz, Chataim Velo Chotim. Right, okay. We want to get rid of sin, not of sinners, and that's why her prayers were answered first. So the Gemara's reasons for her efficaciousness in bringing about the rain, well, it all fits in. One is a kind of mida k'neged mida, right? Measure for measure. Since she gives relief to the poor, so her prayers, what's this theme we've been exploring now for so long? What is rain? Rain is relief. Rain is food, right? Rain is grain, right? Without rain, there's nothing to eat, right? Rain is the stock market, right? So her merit of providing food for the poor is that which is able to bring the merit of the rain bringing sustenance and relief to the whole world. But the matter of her praying that the sinners should all repent instead of being zapped, so how is that connected to the rain? So there are a few different answers that are given. The Ben Ish Chai, because the Ben Ish Chai, Ben Ish Chai was in Baghdad at the end of the 19th century. So he has a sefer called the Ben Yehoyada, which is a perush on Agada. So he says that tshuva is like rain, right? That is just like the rain comes and rejuvenates the dry, withered land. When a person does tshuva, it's like being rejuvenated, right? Or being like brought back to life, you know, like the plants grow after the dry season. So that's why her doing tshuva is like rain. Anyway, there are other answers, but we're almost out of time. But Yehuda, you wanted to say one more thing.
Well, I just want to say that I think this story brings up a very interesting issue, which is what's more important to give to the poor, food versus money? Mm-hmm. And that issue has some source in the Tanakh. You have Bezaram of Akesh Lachem, which certainly sounds like food. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is Yodah Shulchab, you know, Avyon Kappa, Parsal Honey, which more sounds like money. But what I meant was, remember the story about Avyon Kappa?
Why is that sound more like money? Maybe she's handing them bread.
We're talking about Ashley Kyle, who basically sounds, she's in commerce and trade business and actually does seem to have no fooling around money at her disposal. She isn't doing barter far away. Mamercha Glachma, you know, and she's not doing that by exchanging food with people. So I'm assuming they're coins. But my point was something else. My point was that there's a famous story about Rabbi Yochanan, I think Reish Lakish, you know, about to go into the study hall, maybe it's just Rabbi Yochanan, and somebody asked for tzedakah, and Rabbi Yochanan says, just let me get into the study hall. And then by the time they get in, they go out, and a man's already dead.
Right.
You know, just wait for me to get into the study hall. So that clearly sounds to me like what was being asked for was food. Otherwise, why would a person die right away? But in our experience, in my whole life, I've never had an experience where somebody asked me for food. Okay? When somebody puts out their hand, you assume they're asking for money.
For money. Yeah.
Unless it's proven otherwise. Okay? In fact, if somebody put out their hand for seductor today, and you put a crust of bread into their hand, they would look at you like if you lost your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know? In other words, there are certain working assumptions here that basically strike me as being things that should be discussed in a little more detail. That's all.
Okay. I wish everyone a Chag Kosher v'Sameach. And we will meet in 2 weeks' time after Pesach.
Chag Sameach.